Now from the KSFR newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Wednesday, November 13th.
Governor Susana Martinez today announced a proposal to make New Mexico more competitive for nursing professionals by streamlining the requirements for nurses licensed in other states to become licensed here. The proposal includes nearly $220,000 in marketing and advertising funds to recruit nurse practitioners to move to and practice in New Mexico. Texas, Oklahoma, and Utah are target states for the effort because, unlike New Mexico, those states don't offer nurse practitioners independent practice and the ability to write prescriptions. Amtrak Southwest Chief Service to Lamy and other stops could cease if New Mexico doesn't come up with millions of dollars needed for rail line improvements by 2016. That's because Burlington Northern Santa Fe, which owns much of the route, has requested New Mexico, Colorado, and Kansas share costs of maintaining the deteriorating tracks. The cost-sharing price tag amounts to $4 million a year for a decade for New Mexico. The proposal has the support of Amtrak officials and several New Mexico local government leaders, including Santa Fe Mayor David Koss. It's not clear if Governor Martinez is on board. The chief of the firm that owns the vacant St. Catherine Indian School property in Santa Fe has been sentenced to prison after pleading guilty to defrauding a federal program designed to steer work to businesses owned by disabled veterans. The New Mexican reports 63-year-old Max Tafoya has been sentenced to 57 months in prison. Prosecutors say Tafoya falsely claimed another company he owns was qualified to participate in the federal program that helped the firm acquire $11 million worth in contracts. Tafoya's son-in-law also pleaded guilty in federal court and was sentenced to 37 months in prison. At tonight's meeting of the Santa Fe City Council, a number of city charter amendments will be looked at. They'll form the basis for a special election to be held in conjunction with Santa Fe's March municipal election. The city's Charter Review Commission had outlined an expansion of mayoral powers and duties, along with an increase in pay for the post, which would also forbid additional employment. Whether such changes become ballot measures could be determined today. The firm that's providing Santa Fe County leaders guidance on options for its now-abandoned judicial complex on Catron Street downtown recommends replacing the current building for a new one that has parking. David Decker of Studio Southwest Architects explained the reasons for the firm's preferred option.
A new building will result in optimal efficiency and functionality for county uses in a sustainable, contemporary structure. It would fit into a new part of downtown.
Decker stressed the plan for an expanded county presence downtown gives it the best potential for the future. A forum sponsored by the New Mexico Parent Teachers Association with State Education Chief Hannah Scandera Tuesday featured numerous challenges from educators attending the Albuquerque event. The Albuquerque Journal reports many teachers took the opportunity to question Scandera about the changes she has initiated with the support of Governor Susana Martinez. The new Common Core standards, which sets nationwide benchmarks for K-12 education, was a particular point of contention between Scandera and attendees. Scandera plans to hold 4 more such public meetings around the state to explain changes in New Mexico's education policy. Santa Fe County Commissioners are supporting a Healthy Kid, Healthy Economy program to better connect local farmers with schools to provide healthy dietary options for students. Commission Chair Kathy Holian's proposal seeks legislative funding of more than $1.4 million.
To purchase fruits and vegetables from local farmers for school lunches. And for many children, school lunches are the only meals that they can count on.
The measure has the support of the Santa Fe Food Council's Aaron Ortigoza, who said it would allow farmers to further develop local economies by partnering on health issues. Commissioners approved the resolution unanimously. New Mexico's ski season kicks off Saturday when the lifts at Sipapu begin turning, marking the earliest opening in the resort's history. The executive director of Ski New Mexico, George Brooks, says he's excited about the upcoming season given the early snow and cool temperatures.
With the snow we've received in the last couple of weeks at higher elevations, it gives us a base that we haven't seen in probably 10 years or more.
Brooks says Red River is expected to open November 27th, followed by Taos Ski Valley, Ski Santa Fe, and Ski Apache the next day, Thanksgiving. And we'll have more details on the opening of New Mexico ski season during the feature segment of At Noon coming up shortly. Weather for Santa Fe, mostly sunny today and tomorrow with highs from the low to mid-50s, overnight lows near 30. Friday brings a 20% chance for showers. I'm Tom Tropridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And taking a look at Wall Street at midday, all the major indices now in positive territory. The Dow is currently up 13 points at 15,764. The NASDAQ up 27 at 3,947. And the S&P 500 is up 7 points. It stands at 1,774. At Noon on KSFR will continue in just a moment.
Support comes from the Santa Fe Farmers Market, providing our city with fresh, locally grown food year-round.
With autumn upon us, the Farmers Market is now open every Saturday and Tuesday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. in the Rail Yard.
On Sundays from 10 to 4, the market hosts the Rail Yard Artisans Market, featuring fine arts and crafts, food, music, and more.
To learn more, visit SantaFeFarmersMarket.com.
Eleven minutes past the hour as At Noon now segues to today's feature stories. The Albuquerque Sunport is preparing for the potential loss of some Southwest Airlines flight within a year's time. Dallas-based Southwest is the biggest commercial airline using the Albuquerque facility. A federal law titled the Wright Amendment requires that certain flights out of Love Field in Dallas must stop at the Albuquerque Sunport or similar-sized airports in states adjacent to Texas. That amendment expires in less than a year. Joining us now is Sunport spokesman Daniel Harone. Daniel, what potential change in air carrier service do you now anticipate?
We don't know anything for certain at this point. As you know, the Wright Amendment expires next October, meaning flights that are westbound from Love Field in Dallas don't necessarily need to stop in Albuquerque anymore. So, you know, we don't anticipate the loss of any destinations, but the frequencies could go down, those sorts of things, fewer choices. But, you know, we're still going to have a pretty vibrant air service into Albuquerque and out of Albuquerque. So, you know, we just don't know exactly what the changes are going to be right now. But we do feel like this is going to have some sort of negative impact on air service. Well, with the Wright Amendment, when it was put in place in back in the early 70s is what I believe it was, basically it was when they built Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, and the cities wanted all airlines to operate out of Dallas-Fort Worth. So they instituted this amendment, basically this piece of legislation saying that any flight out of Dallas-Love Field could only be within Texas or to adjoining states. And so any long-haul flights anywhere beyond that had to fly out of Dallas-Fort Worth. So back then, it fit Southwest model just fine, and they continued to operate out of Love Field. As they grew and expanded, that no longer made any sense for them, and so they still had to stop in those adjoining states. Some other states were added later, a couple that were not adjoining states. And so as they've grown and expanded, it just didn't make sense. So they lobbied and others lobbied to have that repealed. And so they came to an agreement that in 2014, that would go away and they could fly anywhere they wanted.
Where does the airport revenue come from, and how would a decreased number of flights affect the bottom line?
The airport is responsible for generating all of its own revenue. So our approximately $70 million a year operating budget comes directly from lease agreements, from parking revenue, concession revenue, all these types of things. So taxpayers never, ever pay for the airport. Basically, it's user-generated. So if you use the airport, then yes, you're paying. But if you never come to the airport, never use it, not a penny of tax money comes from that. So it would be a loss in revenue. However, one of the things we've really tried to do in recent years is diversify our revenue stream. So actually over 50% of our revenue now comes from non-airline sources. And those, again, are those leases, are those concession revenues, parking. We have a new 80-acre site at the former Aviation Center for Excellence, is what we're calling it, the ACE project. And we are wanting to recruit aviation-related businesses to that area, and we would lease out the land and potentially buildings. We do have a little set aside for some commercial use that fronts Gibson. So, you know, we really try to ensure that we have a diverse revenue stream. In addition, we anticipated, we knew this was coming years and years ago, so many of our bond payments drop off next year to coincide with this. So our debt service is much lower. And, you know, frankly, the airport is in the best financial shape it's ever been. Our bond rating, our credit rating, our ability to borrow or leverage any money is one of the highest in the industry as far as medium hub airports are concerned. There's about 45 medium hub airports across the country, and we are in the top five as far as our financial health is concerned. So we're pleased to be able to do that. And then lastly, we're really working with other carriers. You know, we know that this is going to have some sort of impact. So we've been working. Competition is always good. So we've been working hard with other carriers. JetBlue is one of our latest success stories in recruiting them. They started service in April and have had tremendous success. But, you know, we continue to work on other carriers and existing carriers to start new routes and those sorts of things. But, you know, really it comes down to what we can do for our customers. And we want to be able to have as much air service for them as possible.
And how has the airport fared during these last few years of a stressed economy?
As far as our traffic is concerned, those sorts of things, it has had an impact. You know, our passenger levels are down over 20% in the last 5 years. So that definitely has made a dent in things. However, again, as far as the economic downturn, we saw that coming as well. And we made the appropriate adjustments to our budget. We've tightened the belt, as it were. We've looked at other things to save money. You know, we've done a lot of really green solar projects, those types of things, and been able to leverage grant money for those. So we're not spending a lot of out-of-pocket money. But, you know, we now generate 2 megawatts of electricity for the terminal. We've changed out many of our lighting fixtures to LEDs. And we're saving a tremendous amount of money just doing these types of things. So we really have been able to tighten the belt and you know, live within our means, even when we see some of these revenue sources decline because of the lower passenger traffic.
At this time, do you foresee any other major challenges at the Sunport?
Well, we hope not. You know, the economic downturn was a biggie. The Wright Amendment, we feel like it's going to have an impact, but it's nothing that we can't overcome. And again, I'll reiterate that Southwest has been a great partner to the city for over 30 years. We've had a long relationship. We understand that their business model has changed to some degree, and now they're able to expand a little bit more freely. You know, look forward to a brighter future.
Anything else you'd like our listeners to know?
This isn't a doomsday type scenario. It's not like air travel is going to come to a screeching halt with the expiration of the Wright Amendment. It may limit some choices. We may have fewer flights, but, you know, I think we have a very robust air service program in Albuquerque, and so, you know, we feel like going forward, people are going to be able to have many, many choices in where they want to fly.
Daniel Heron with the Albuquerque International Sunport, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
The Santa Fe Art Institute presents SFAI 140. One evening, 20 inspiring talks, 140 seconds each. Join SFAI for an evening of creativity and conversations, November 21st, 7 p.m. Learn more at sfai.org or call 424-5050. A message from the tax-exempt Santa Fe Art Institute.
18 minutes past the hour as we continue today's edition of At Noon. Alcohol causes a number of severe problems in our state. Now, one group has undertaken a large study to look at exactly how big the problem is in New Mexico. Here is KSFR news reporter Charles Maynard with the story.
It's no secret that New Mexico has a significant problem with alcohol abuse and addiction. In an effort to delineate exactly how severe the problem is, the New Mexico League of Women Voters has undertaken a 3-year in-depth study on the issue. Jan Bray is the chairman of the Alcohol Study Committee for the League.
Well, we had a committee of about seven people. None of us were experts when we started, but we went to the medical library and the reference librarian there at UNM gave us some fabulous help. She pointed us in the direction of great studies in the medical literature and to people here in New Mexico who have done a lot of study of this problem, you know, that is New Mexico specific. So we got in touch with our new best friend, Jim Rober, he's an epidemiologist who studies alcohol in the Department of Health. And he connected us with a lot of other people, including people at the CDC and the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration and the National Institutes of Health, and also with the people who had done the Senate Memorial 18 Drug Policy Task Force. They did a report that was amazing. It was 184 pages and had everything you didn't want to know. And so we had about 20 different sources.
One of the most disturbing findings was the amount of binge drinking being done in our state and by whom.
Well, it is very scary, and it is not getting better. Who binge drinks? In 2010, binge drinking prevalence among men in the lower 48 states was 23%, and it was much more in New Mexico, two times more in most New Mexico counties. We have the highest rate of kids under 13 doing it, which is another really scary statistic.
The financial impact on New Mexico is significant.
In 2007, the economic costs of alcohol abuse were $2.8 billion for just that one year. That's more than $1,400 per person. It's rising. It went up 11% from 2006 to 2007.
In addition to binge drinking, the study revealed some other trends.
Well, the trends we found are not good, except for DWI deaths, which have gone down significantly. So New Mexico deserves a pat on the back for that. All other types of alcohol-related deaths have remained stable or increased over time. And only 3.1% of persons in New Mexico who needed treatment for alcoholism or alcohol problems received it. So that's a really ugly, ugly thing.
Bray has some specific interventions she would like to see undertaken in the state.
The first thing I'd probably do is the thing that all the studies recommend is the most effective way of cutting down alcohol deaths, and that's raising the taxes on alcohol. There are six kind of categories of things that are proven to do well in reducing death and harm from alcohol. Regulate the physical availability of alcohol, altering the drinking context, education, treatment, and early intervention is extremely important, and prevention, education and prevention. They're very, very important. You have to have both individually oriented treatment and environmentally oriented treatment. That's to say norms, laws, social reinforcement, education, parental influence, very important. So if you have those two things reinforcing each other, you're going to make some dent in it. You're going to make a significant dent.
Jan Bray from the New Mexico League of Women Voters.
I think it really the big message is that both prevention and treatment not only work, but they're very cost-effective and they're very good investments. The CDC has done a study, and they say that for every dollar invested in prevention, you avoid $18 in social costs and incarceration and lost wages and all those bad things. The other good news is that treatment is effective, cost-effective, And if you invest a dollar in treatment, you will avoid $12 in costs. Now, that seems to me to be a pretty good strategy, a very good investment.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
Are you being paid less than the city minimum wage? Does your boss not pay overtime or make you work off the clock? Let me guess, you haven't made a claim because you're afraid to get fired. Wage theft is a crime, and you have the right to recuperate your wages without retaliation. Come to the Anti-Wage Theft Clinic on Thursday, November 21st at 5:30 p.m. at Somos Un Pueblo Unido, located at 1804 Espinacita Street. Attorneys will be on hand to answer questions and help you file your claim. For more information, call the Worker Center at Somos at 983-6247.
24 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. New Mexico's 2013 ski season will kick off later this week when the Sipapu Resort opens on Saturday, the earliest opening in the resort's history. Joining us again here at the news desk is KSFR's Tom Trowbridge. Tom, you spoke with someone at Ski New Mexico for your feature story on the start of ski season, correct?
That's right, Dan, and Ski New Mexico Executive Director George Brooks says he's excited about the upcoming season because of the early snow and cool temperatures that New Mexico's seen in recent weeks. And Brooks says Sipapu's Saturday opening will be followed in close succession by other ski areas.
Then followed by Red River, which will open on Wednesday the 27th, followed by Taos Ski Valley, Santa Fe Ski Area, and Ski Apache, all targeting for Thanksgiving Day, the 28th of November.
Brooks says New Mexico's late summer and autumn precipitation has been a huge help in preparation for this ski season.
One of the important things in skiing and the ski industry is to have a wetter fall. When this happens, you get moisture into the ground. Then when the ground freezes, it doesn't draw moisture from the snow, so it prepares the ground much better. And then as the snow arrives and the temperatures stay cold, you don't lose the snowpack that you get.
Local economies in ski resort towns, says Brooks, are heavily reliant on the ski industry.
Well, skiing is a big player in the wintertime, especially in the communities in which they reside. I mean, Taos and Taos Ski Valley, Red River, Angel Fire, moving on down to Ski Apache. It's very significant for the visitors that come in to ski. And the number of skier visits, the higher they are, obviously, the more taxes that are paid.
Brooks says the ski industry also brings with it employment opportunities.
The overall impact from the ski industry last year was $404 million, and that was down $71 million from the previous year. So you can see where 100,000 skier visits do significantly change things within those rural communities, and also even within the state tax structure.
Overall, Brooks says skiing is important to New Mexico's economy.
The overall impact from the ski industry last year was $404 million, and that was down $71 million from the previous year. So you can see where 100,000 skier visits do significantly change things within those rural communities, and also even within the state tax structure.
Last year, considered a pretty good one by Ski New Mexico's Brooks, recorded 724,000 skier visits.
That was down about 130,000 from the year before. So that's a fairly significant drop. It's 11% drop from the previous year, and the economic impact that changes things is, it can be $10-12 million.
Brooks believes at least part of the reason for last year's decline in New Mexico skier visits is public perception.
It can be nice weather where you are, nice in the sense of you can go out and garden, but at the same time you could go up to the mountains and ski on some very good ski conditions. So besides the lack of a little snow last year, the perception there wasn't much snow probably hurt us more than anything else.
That perception issue, says Brooks, is a matter that has prompted changes from New Mexico's ski resorts.
The snow conditions at the north, or in the north, in the mountains, is probably not as great as someone maybe saying in Albuquerque or in Dallas, Texas, looking out their window and saying, hey, you know, it's 60 degrees out here. How good can the skiing be? The ski industry has been very diligent in putting in new snowmaking equipment, maintaining the condition of the trails much better. So I think perception is a major concern.
George Brooks, executive director of Ski New Mexico.
Well, I just think it's, if you're within the state of New Mexico, ski our New Mexico areas. If you haven't tried some of the smaller areas or some of the less well-known areas, try those. I think you'd be pleasantly surprised with what you would find. I've had the opportunity in my career to ski all over the world, and I can tell you the skiing in New Mexico is second to none. We have the great light powder, the tremendous trails, and an atmosphere created by the owners of the ski areas that is first class worldwide.
For KSFR, I'm Tom Trowbridge.
And, of course, the quality and duration of our winter sports season will depend, as always, on what Mother Nature throws our way. To get a handle on what our local meteorologists think will be most likely in coming months, we caught up with Andy Church of the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque. Church says a couple of quick hits of white stuff for our mountains is due in the short term. He also notes the long-term indicators for winter overall.
There is good potential, and on Friday and Friday night, we have a system coming through that looks like it's going to be able to tap some subtropical moisture and have moisture to work with. Not all that cold, but it will bring snow above about 7,500 feet or so on Friday night into Saturday morning, and then another stronger system potentially for Sunday. It could, looks like, bring significant snowfall to the northern mountains on Sunday and Sunday evening. So things are looking up, and then beyond that, the longer range outlooks and models are indicating that we're still going to be in a neutral state in the equatorial Pacific Ocean. And that generally tends to be slightly below average for the winter season for the majority of the mountains in New Mexico. And one of the things, though, that's an upside is that the Pacific is warming substantially, an unprecedented warming in the last 4 months or so relative to other autumn seasons in the past. And so things are looking up so that we're hopeful that maybe by late winter into the spring season that we can get above average snowfall. It still looks like the winter overall is going to be slightly below average. But again, all it takes is a couple of good storms like Sipapu had in October, and that changes everything for a particular mountain range or portion of New Mexico.
And while we often focus on conditions in the Pacific as key to our weather here, Church notes that the Atlantic Ocean plays a role too.
It turns out that the Atlantic Ocean is very important. A lot of people that grew up in New Mexico, 70s and 80s were a very wet period. And the reason a lot of scientists, researchers think that it had to do with the Atlantic multi-decadal oscillation being negative or in a cold phase while the Pacific was in a warm phase. So those are kind of the key things that we look at. And although the Atlantic isn't really changing much, it doesn't take much of a change for it to have a big impact on the weather pattern over North America. It is slightly cooling, but you tend to see these, obviously, some of the cooling during the fall and early winter season. So we're keeping a close eye on it, but the trend is good for us.
Meteorologist Andy Church with the National Weather Service office in Albuquerque.
The Linzic proudly presents Fusion Theater Company's The Mountaintop by Katori Hall on November 15th and 16th. Winner of the 2010 Olivier Award for Best New Play, The Mountaintop is a gripping reimagining of the last night of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s life. For tickets to The Mountaintop at the Linzic November 15th and 16th, call 988-1234 or visit TicketSantaFe.org. The Linzic is a nonprofit, member-supported organization.
12:33 here in the KSFR newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour, presents the perfect opportunity to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
You know, a lot of today's problems with terrorists can be traced back hundreds of years. But before we get into that, let me mention again that my sister-in-law is a Muslim, an Indonesian Muslim. She is not a terrorist. Muslim does not equal terrorist. I would venture to guess that during our country's heyday of lynching, most members of the lynch mob, at least in the South, were Baptists. Muslim does not equal terrorist. Baptist did not, and of course does not, equal lynch mob. Anyway, I believe our problem with today's terrorists began with their ancestors when we went traipsing into the Middle East with the Crusades. You know, knights wearing too much armor, riding really tired horses, allegedly trying to reclaim the Holy Land for the true God, which would, of course, have been the Christian God. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. Beginning in 1095 and lasting a few hundred years. I've never understood the Crusades. I say one person's true believer is another person's infidel. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk. With many thanks to my contributing colleagues today, Charles Maynard and Tom Trowbridge. We'll be back tomorrow with more news of and for New Mexico for you. And as always, we hope you join us.